Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to mini episode 328 of Real Life Ghost Stories. And I have three spooky stories for you, and the last story comes from the 30th of November 2023. And story number one comes from Samantha. I only recently started listening to the podcast, so I've only listened to a fraction of your many, many episodes. But I am curious to find out if the same street has come up before. I went to university in deepest, darkest Wales, and had some very unusual experiences in two houses on the same street, which was mostly rented out to students. It might still be, but I don't think there are that many students these days. The street is in Lampeter. My experiences were in number 3 and number 9, but I've since heard that quite a lot of students during that time also had weird experiences. Nikki, one of my housemates in number 3, as it happens, the same person who recommended your podcast, has some stories to tell about her time there. She moved into number 9 after I had left Lampeter and saw some very odd stuff. I moved out of university halls and into number 9 in the summer of 2001, just as my first year ended. I absolutely loved it. I had a massive first floor room with a big bay window and a wardrobe that was almost big enough to store the ridiculous amount of clothes that I had. I kept different hours from most of my housemates. None of my lectures were before midday that year, and I'm a night owl by nature. But that wasn't a big deal, as I hung out with friends outside of the house, and I made sure I was quiet as a mouse when I came in. The only issue was the girls in the basement flat downstairs. One in particular seemed to go insane after she and our housemate Martin broke up. She started accusing him of deliberately jumping up and down first thing in the morning, making a racket to wake her up. I got into the habit of having toast for dinner when I came in just before going to bed, usually around midnight, I guess. The hallway had light switches on mechanical timers. I think it was a spring mechanism of some sort. You would press a button to turn the light on and it would slowly come back out, and the lights would go off. There was one by the front door which I always switched on when I came in, and one at the other end of the hall by the kitchen door. Due to the timing of it, part of my routine was seeing the light go out in the reflection of the kitchen window as I rinsed my plate. Then, one fateful night, I saw the light go off as usual. And when I turned around, it was on again. I had a full view of the hallway when I saw the light go off. Nobody was there. And I failed to see how any of my housemates could have come out of their room, put the light on, and got back to their room in the time it took me to turn around. Besides, the doors were heavy fire doors. They weren't exactly quiet to open and close. Still, maybe I imagined the light going off in the reflection. Maybe something weird was happening with the electrics. I rationalized it, but I also started to pay special attention to my turning the light on and it going off. The light went off and stayed off as usual for the next couple of weeks, and I was becoming more and more convinced I'd imagined seeing the light go off in the reflection. Then it happened again. I had more of my wits about me this time. I knew for sure that I had seen the light go off, and when I inspected the switch by the kitchen door as it was nearest to me, but not the one I'd switched on, not only was it pressed in, but it had only just started to come back out. Somehow, it had just been pushed in. Nothing weird happened, to me at least, for the rest of the year until I moved into the basement flat of number 9 with a friend, whose natural night owl rhythm was closer to mine. My former housemates moved into a smaller place, and half the rugby team moved into the main house at number 9. I chuckled to myself more than once thinking about the crazy girl who had lived below us, because unlike Martin, the rugby guys were very much into exercising, and whoever was directly above me really did do very loud exercises first thing, and they were a lot bigger than Martin, so it was bloody loud. The Christmas holidays came and my friend Caroline asked to stay because she couldn't afford to go home, but she also wasn't allowed to stay in the halls as they'd rented them out for a conference or something. I spent Christmas with my family and I came home before the uni holidays were over because I already felt bad about Caroline being alone at Christmas. She was white as a sheet when she answered the door, shaking, but also really annoyed with me. "You didn't warn me upstairs was haunted." I calmly said, one, yes I did, I'm 100% sure that I had told her about the lights at any rate. Two, what are you talking about? She explained that there had been footsteps and banging noises the whole time that I had been gone. She had rung the doorbell and banged on the upstairs many times, but never got an answer, and the lights were always off. I made her a cup of tea and started to unpack. At first, I thought she'd managed to spook herself by being in a strange place at a time of year when she would normally be surrounded by family. On the other hand, I had witnessed a light being turned on upstairs by something I couldn't see. Then the footsteps started. They were clear as a bell, and we were able to follow them along the hallway, into the room above my bed, then out again and into the kitchen. Because I was so familiar with the house upstairs, I even recognised the creaking one of the stools in the kitchen made. I even knew exactly which one it was. I reassured Caroline that it was probably one of the guys upstairs and they had just come back early, although I think I was trying to convince myself as much as anything else. I went out and knocked on the door at number 9 several times. No answer. And all the lights, including the one I swear turned itself on at least twice, were off. It was possible that someone was sitting in the dark and refusing to answer the door, so when I went back into the flat and I could hear not just footsteps now or a creaking stool, but what sounded like someone opening and then slamming all of the drawers and cupboards shut with some force, I went out into the shared garden and put my face right up against the kitchen window. Nobody was there. I went back into the flat and could hear footsteps coming out of the kitchen. Caroline confirmed the banging and footsteps continued the whole time I was out the back. Eventually the noise upstairs stopped and we went to bed. Caroline's whole room still wasn't available, so she stayed with me, on my bed because she did not want to be alone, which was fair enough. First thing the next morning, the familiar loud banging noises that sounded like someone very heavy jumping up and down above our heads started up. Caroline had turned white again. "That's been going on the whole time you were gone. It happens most mornings." I got dressed and went straight up to the front door of number 9. Still no answer. A couple of days later, the lads from upstairs came home and confirmed that they had all gone home for the holidays. And they had all arrived back the day before term started, several days after I had got back home. After the lads upstairs were back, I went back to attributing every noise to them. If it wasn't, I didn't need to know. I can only apologise to the girls downstairs, especially Martin's ex. It turns out you weren't crazy after all. He may not have been making those noises, but something was. Now, I feel that I should mention that this house was a terraced house, but it was an Edwardian stone-built house with incredibly thick walls. I've lived in terraces with thin walls, where you could hear the neighbours. That wasn't the case here. Besides, we could follow exactly where the footsteps went, and I was very familiar with the sounds of the old 70s kitchen and its rickety furniture upstairs. In the summer of 2002, after I moved out of the basement flat, I moved into another house in the same street with a bunch of friends and my new boyfriend, who I'm still with 20 years later. It was a really nice house. Unlike number 9, it had been done up relatively recently. It had a really nice kitchen, an actual living room that hadn't just been turned into another bedroom to maximise the rent. And I had the same room as I had had at number 9, minus the bay window. The houses were all almost identical. Then the weirdness commenced, and I had to leave in December 2003 due to ill health, so I wasn't even there that long compared to number 9. I was now in a household where I counted as the early bird, and one evening I was heading for bed when one of the strangest things I've ever experienced happened. I had just sat down and moved the covers back when my bedroom door flung open. Now, my other half, along with most of my housemates, were out. Only Neil was downstairs watching a film on the TV. I turned to the door, wondering why the hell Neil had opened my door without knocking. The door, a heavy fire door, stayed open. The light in the landing was on and the light in my room was off. There was no shadow in the doorway. I froze, staring at the doorway. Eventually, the door shut and I sat there dumbfounded, trying to work out what had just happened. Then the edge of the bed, right where I was sitting, dipped, as if someone else had also sat down or was lying down, right on the edge. Though as if they were sitting on something that wasn't quite where my bed was, if that makes sense. As if they were getting into another bed that was positioned about a foot to the left of where mine was. It also suddenly felt really cold right where the bed dipped, although that might have just been the shivers going up my spine. Then all of a sudden the edge of the bed bounced as if a weight had suddenly been lifted off, and my bedroom door flung open and shut again. The door was open for a brief second this time, but there was still no shadow where there should have been one. I was a bit shaken up by all of that, so I went downstairs and told Neil all about it, who was not in the least bit surprised. The next few weeks there was all sorts of weirdness. My old housemates could tell you all about the things that they saw, but from my point of view, the main weirdness surrounded phones. They kept going missing, either turning up where they shouldn't be or not turning up at all. As well as mobile phones, those good old indestructible Nokias, we had two wireless landline phones that would not stay in their cradles, which was annoying as their battery life was rubbish. Even my super extra skeptic boyfriend totally freaked out when one of the landline phones appeared in his locked bedroom. Only he had the key. He's since rationalized it, insisting somehow someone borrowed his key when he wasn't looking and put the phone in there for reasons. Now, maybe we had a phone-obsessed klepto in the house. But why put a phone in someone's room? Something much weirder happened to me a few weeks after the phone started going missing. My friend Caroline, yes, the same poor Caroline I abandoned in the basement of a haunted house over Christmas, was visiting, and she was following me up the stairs towards my room. The landing light was off, but the light in one of the bedrooms was on, and casting light onto the landing. There was a silhouette of a woman in a long dress and hair in a bun of some sort, as if they were standing in the doorway of that bedroom. Now, I was a bit slow on the uptake here. I was wearing jeans and a t-shirt, and the shadow was most definitely not being cast by someone standing on the stairs. But for some reason, in that split second, I was focused on the hair and I was confused because my hair was down. I turned to look at Caroline as I was sure her hair was also down. At that moment, I suddenly realized that it didn't matter. The shadow had to be cast by someone in the doorway of that bedroom, and nobody was there. We were the only people in the house at that moment. Plus, while I saw the shadow, I did not see anyone in the doorway, which would have been pretty hard to miss. When I turned back, the shadow was gone. I cannot for the life of me think of a rational explanation for any of this. The nearest I can come up with is that maybe for some reason sometimes you can see and hear another universe along this particular street, and that sometimes items, well, phones and push light switches at any rate, that exist in both universes can be moved by people in either universe. Maybe it was another me coming into my bedroom that night, could sense my presence somehow, maybe even saw me briefly, and was just as freaked out as me but ran out of the bedroom in a panic rather than freezing like I did. Maybe it was even a silhouette of me in the light from that bedroom. It wasn't mine, but during the summer holiday one of my housemates let me use that room for sewing. One of the things I did in there was altering one of my costumes for a play I was going to be in. Maybe that was me trying it on. Maybe a different group of people moved into number 9 in that other universe. Maybe one of them was really into exercise, stayed for more than 1 year and stayed over the holidays. Maybe the house wasn't rented out to students at all. As far as I know, though, our current understanding of the multiverse, if it even exists, means that theory is as laughable as dead people or fairies messing with us. But assuming these were ghosts and that ghosts are dead people, why did I see both silhouettes where there shouldn't have been one, and no silhouettes where there should have been? What are the rules? None of it makes any sense.
Samantha?
That really sounded like my teacher voice. Sorry, I apologise. Samantha, that's much better. That last couple of sentences has really scared me. Because what are the rules? So why are you seeing silhouettes sometimes when there shouldn't be, and no silhouettes other times when there should be? What are the rules? And were you seeing ghosts, or experiencing ghosts, or hearing ghosts, or like you said, was it like alternate universe you or alternate universe other people in the house? So just to go back to the beginning and to remind you of where Samantha was for these stories, she was in a house that was number 3 and number 9 on a street in Lampeter in Wales. I'm very sorry if I've pronounced Lampeter wrong. It's Lampeter. If that sounds familiar to you and you're like, oh, I know that street, drop me an email, because I would imagine that many people have lived in student housing over the years, and if lots of people have lived there over the years, then maybe lots of people have had experiences. So people might be sitting listening to this going, oh my god, that's the house that I lived in. And like you, I feel so sorry for that girl who everyone was like, oh, lol, she's crazy, being really cross with Martin for jumping up and down first thing in the morning to wake her up, even though he was never doing that. She was obviously hearing something. She was obviously hearing whatever it was that you had heard, you know, jumping up and down, or like you thought it was the rugby guys exercising, etc. She was obviously hearing that too and being like, that dickhead is purposefully trying to wake me up in the morning. And the light switch going off and then coming back on again. I know exactly the type of switches that you're talking about. And it takes considerable effort to push those in and then for them to slowly come out again, right? But it's such a tiny thing that you would be like, oh, this obviously was just my imagination, or I didn't see it actually in the reflection going off. I must have just mistaken it for something else. So of course you're not going to take it particularly seriously, or you might take it seriously but be like, put it at the back of your mind. And the footsteps that you describe, you know, when Caroline is staying the night, you heard them go along the hallway, into the room above your bed, out again into the kitchen, creaking onto the stool, so it sounds like it was sitting down, and then opening and closing presses and drawers. Like, that does sound like somebody going about their day, like going about their business, some sort of residual thing, or like you said, different universe you or different universe rugby boys going about their day. And even, you know, whatever happened with like your bedroom door being flung open. And like you said, those are those big, heavy sort of fire doors. They're not easy to open. They don't open with the wind or by accident. So it flies open, it stays open, and then whatever it is comes and sits on your bed, but not exactly where your bed is, like about a foot away from where your bed should be. It honestly feels to me like some sort of glitch in the matrix, like some sort of time slip stuff going on, that you were like, you and your housemates are privy to stuff that they shouldn't be privy to. And almost like the other universe you guys or the other universe people are probably hearing you do things, seeing you do things, and thinking that the house is haunted. And phones are such a specific thing. They're something that people use all the time. So what if you're right? What if there were certain items like phones that could be seen in the other universe? So somebody would just be picking them up and dropping them elsewhere. Oh, you've hurt my brain, Samantha. I don't appreciate this. You've hurt my brain. And I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my evening now. I'm just going to be panicking about the multiverse.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And story number two comes from Janine. New listener here, and I don't know if you are aware, but our buddy Zach has parts of Little Bastard in his Las Vegas haunted museum. Don't judge me for having visited. When I was in the Dybbuk box room, I did start to feel quite anxious, and when we got out of the room, which is quite small, and you walk in and then around the box and then leave. When I walked out, I was actually crying a bit. After about a minute, I felt better. It was a weird thing, but it happened. I didn't have any other reactions in the museum but that one. Janine, I'm not entirely sure if you wanted this to be read out in the podcast, but I said I would because no shame in visiting Zach Bacon's haunted museum. I've also visited Zach Bacon's haunted museum, and I also saw the parts of Little Bastard. There was a woman on my tour who very confidently said, "That is not Little Bastard," because, and then listed off all the places where the parts of Little Bastard were. And I was like, I don't know who to believe here. I'm stressed. I don't know who to believe. Now, I didn't feel anything when I saw the Dybbuk box in the Dybbuk box room. I do think that I had personal reasons for not being fully engaged with the Dybbuk box room. I had found the room prior to that very difficult. I believe the room prior to the Dybbuk box room was the room that was dedicated to a particularly gruesome serial killer. And I found that really, I actually found it really upsetting. And I was quite full of rage after I had walked out of that room. And yeah, I'm not going to go into it here. But it's very strange timing that this story comes up now, because I've just been talking about my experience on Patreon, my experience at the Haunted Museum. That is not some sort of ploy to get people to go over to the Patreon, but I was just talking about it this week. And what I did say was that on my tour, I had multiple people who got very affected in different rooms. I had one person who was in a couple. They had to leave the tour really early because of the feelings that they got in one room. And there were other people in other rooms who you could see were very clearly physically affected by what they were experiencing in these rooms, whatever that was. You know, people were sweating, people were getting upset, people were feeling ill, feeling unwell. There was a lot going on. So I totally see how you had that experience in the Dybbuk box room. And the Zach Bacon's Haunted Museum, it's a weird place. It definitely is. And story number three today comes from Chrissy. I haven't written in ages now, but you might remember me as having sent you research on Mackenzie King, Canada's former Prime Minister who held seances to talk to his late mother and dogs. Or as the person who wrote in about the house I grew up in with its phantom smells, voices that disappeared when you went downstairs, and a ghost who slammed a French door in front of a terrified 8-year-old me. Well, I have something a little different than ghosts for you this time, although I do have more. Somehow, and for reasons I can't understand, I think I predicted the past year of my life. Last summer, I was in the process of recovering from a very traumatizing previous winter. I had decided to leave the city I'd lived in for 13 years and was in the process of applying to jobs that I thought would be good for me both personally and professionally. There was no telling where I'd end up. At least, that's what I thought. One night, I was up at our family cottage with my mum and I had a dream. In it, I could clearly see the different paths my life could take. One where I stayed in the city I had been planning to leave, where I would marry the man I'd been dating and would have no children, but would end up with a content and financially more comfortable life. Another where I would move provinces away and it would be hard, but if I stayed, I would meet someone, have kids, and life would be very busy and very fulfilling, but money, or lack thereof, would always plague us as a problem. In the dream, I remember feeling like I didn't want either life. I wanted something down the middle of both. That's why I saw the final path. I would move provinces away, and it would be hard, but it would be integral to me getting a job and moving to a particular city I knew well back in my home province. I would become a godparent to one of my best friend's kids, and would end up meeting someone and having one child of my own, a boy. I felt this path was a certainty, and the only downside of this path is that I would have some kind of accident in which I broke my back. I told my mum about it the next day, but kind of forgot about it after, until I got a job offer provinces away. It was the best offer I had had at the time, and I took the job. It was hard, but it's kept me fed with a roof over my head. In May, the man I'd been dating flew out to visit me, and one night when we were lying in bed, I turned to him and I said, "I've got the strangest feeling that I'm going to break my back." He was surprised and asked if my back was okay. I told him it was fine, and we laughed it off as a strange thought my brain had come up with. Once again, I forgot all about it. In August, I was doing a horseback archery workshop. I've done both independently, but never as a joint activity. I'm comfortable around large animals, having grown up on a farm, but I had an uneasy pit in my stomach. I thought I was just nervous about doing well, but I turned to one of the other women in the workshop and said, "I know it's just my anxiety, but I feel like if I get on that horse, I'll end up in hospital." She laughed and we commiserated about anxiety. I got on the horse and everything was fine. He's regularly ridden by the 11-year-old of one of the instructors and is used to the archery track and process. We walked the track the first time and I fired at the targets, hitting 2 out of 3. The second time I felt more relaxed and encouraged the horse into a trot, this time hitting all 3 targets and getting a bullseye on the second one. I was thrilled. I felt like an Amazon. And one of the instructors even said he was impressed I was so good so quickly and invited me to consider competing. Now, completely relaxed and happy, I readied myself for the 3rd go on the track. But my horse kept straying from the track. There was nothing there to startle him or to scare him, so I tried to get him to return, and with no warning, he just bolted. I remember being terrified but oddly calm as he ran towards a shed called the judge's booth. I thought, well, this is happening. I have to duck at just the right moment. The horse ran under the shed, and at the very last moment, I folded myself in half to avoid getting smashed into the tin roof. Then he put all of his legs straight and his head down, sending me flying over his head. And I remember thinking in the nanoseconds before I was thrown, I have to tuck myself so I don't hit my head or my neck. And I did so before somersaulting over his head. I could have easily been killed or paralyzed, but I missed my head and neck, landing on my right shoulder and then my back. As I laid on the ground with the wind knocked out of me, I knew I had full feeling and the ability to move my legs, but breathing was painful and gave me a sharp pain in my side. So I thought it was a couple of cracked or maybe broken ribs. It must have been the adrenaline that kept me going, but once I got to the hospital, I even walked into the ER under my own power, albeit crying in pain. So I was sure I would get my ribs wrapped and that'd be it. Given the nature of the accident, they did a scan and discovered that I had broken 2 vertebrae in my back. One had been crushed and broken, a burst fracture, and the other had compound fractures. I was sent to a larger hospital via ambulance and stayed there for 2 miserable weeks before I was able to return home for in-home full-time care. I am very lucky. Despite some lingering mobility issues as I write this, I am back to being able to live on my own, and I'm expected to make a relatively full recovery, although my back will never be perfectly straight again, and I will always be slightly shorted from having lost 30% of one of my vertebrae. This would all be freaky enough, but while I was recovering, I got word that I was being offered a very lucrative job in the same city I had dreamed that I would move to. The friend whose kid I'd be godmother to, well, she still doesn't have kids, but since I've gone, she's met the man we think she's probably going to end up marrying. So now I'm stuck wondering, did I really foretell breaking my back? And if so, why didn't it feel like I could do anything to stop it? Why didn't it seem to stick with me? Was the universe trying very hard to warn me, or was it sort of acclimatizing me to the inevitability of the accident so that when it did, I was relaxed enough to make the proper moves and mitigate the damage? Am I going to end up meeting someone now that I'm moving to this city that I foresaw? And does this mean I'm going to have a son? I don't know if I think this is the world's oddest coincidence or if I'm the world's worst psychic. But either way, I'm going to think about this series of events for the rest of my life. I honestly think, Chrissy, that's it. Like, regardless of what people think. So regardless of whether people think, oh, you know, that's just, it's just coincidences. That's all it is. It's just a dream and some coincidences. Nobody, I think, who would say it's just a dream and coincidences would also be able to put that to the back of their mind, I think, or be able to just go, it's just a dream and coincidences. I'm never going to think about it again. Because whether or not you believe it's coincidence, whether or not you believe it's some sort of premonition, whether or not you believe it's the universe letting you know these things are going to happen, I would be thinking about that for all eternity. That is insane. Absolutely insane. And it's not just the fact that you broke your back, which is obviously horrendous, and I'm so sorry that happened to you. But obviously I'm really glad that you are, you know, on track to make a full recovery, obviously with some changes. But it's not just the fact that you broke your back, right? So if you had broken your back and maybe you were doing horse riding regularly, or maybe you were generally doing an activity that could cause you to get injured, right? You could say that your brain was worried about that and it manifested that into this dream about breaking your back. But it's the other stuff too. It's the, you've broken your back, oh shit, now you've just been offered a really lucrative job in the city of that was in your dream. To me, and obviously so many people listening to this will have their own take on this story, but to me it sounds like you were obviously agonizing over this stuff, and then in your dream, it's like the universe, whatever you think it is, laid out these options for you and said, these are the options and this is what will happen if you take this particular path. I'm so dumbfounded by the stories in today's episode. Chrissy, please keep us up to date. Because I just want to know. I want to know if you end up meeting that man. I want to know if you end up having a little boy, if you become godparent to your friend's kid. I want to know all of these things. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Thank you to Samantha, Janine and Chrissy for sending in your stories. Remember, the last story comes from the 30th of November 2023. And if you would like to send in your story, you can do so by emailing it to reallifeghoststoriespodcast@gmail.com. You can also check out the website reallifeghoststoriespodcast.com. And if you are desperate for some extra content, you can subscribe to the Patreon. That's patreon.com/reallifeghoststories, where for $5 a month or $2 a month, you can access heaps of extra content, as well as every single main and mini episode completely ad-free. And on that note, I shall see you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.